Okay, good morning, everybody. You look so beautiful. Before we get started today, I want to draw your attention to a really special program that is taking place on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av afternoon, as we know, is Sunday, and it's oftentimes a long and challenging afternoon. And so the rabbis of our community are coming together this year for a really special initiative called Many Shuls, One Community, Spend Tisha B'Av Together. So you'll notice it's on the back page of our weekly. And essentially what's going to happen is different rabbis are going to crisscross to different shuls. So we're going to host a rabbi from East Boca, and Rabbi Goldberg is going to be speaking at Young Israel. And basically from 2:30 till 6:15, there are going to be shiurim going on throughout Boca Raton, different rabbis at different shuls, to really showcase. You know, we talk about unity a lot, but we don't oftentimes showcase it in terms of learning Torah and in terms of teaching Torah. So what a special opportunity for our community to showcase the Torah of our community, the achdus of our community, the unity of our community, and in the merit of that, hopefully, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, as we write in the flyer, one shiur at a time. So again, whatever shul you go to in Boca, your shul is represented here, and I encourage you not only to attend the shiurim in your shul, but you could be a little daring and go to a shiur in a different shul. And if you do that, you can really fill your afternoon in a very meaningful way. So again, check out the back page of the weekly, Many Shuls, One Community, different rabbis coming together for a really unprecedented display of achdus in learning Torah. Where am I? Rabbi Goldberg is representing Boca Raton Synagogue. Okay. Turn to page 938. I just arrange it. Turn to page 938. So we're in the beginning of Parshas Devarim. Of course, Parshas Devarim is referred to as the Mishneh Torah, which is the repetition of the Torah. And of course, we know, we've talked about this in previous years, that the Torah doesn't just repeat itself, that there are new things mentioned in Sefer Devarim. And we've discussed in the past what exactly that means, what's the nature of the Mishneh Torah, who wrote the Mishneh Torah, as opposed to the first four books of the Torah, which are written in what person? Third person. So here, Moshe Rabbeinu starts writing from what perspective? From first perspective, Va'omar, and I said, and many of the commentaries wonder about the tone that's changed in Sefer Devarim. The Abarbanel, for example, points out that these were speeches that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Klal Yisrael, and Hashem loved the content of them so much that Hashem decides to put them into His Torah, which is an astounding idea. Again, we've spent classes on this in the past, but it's really an amazing idea that Moshe initiates the content in Sefer Devarim, and Hashem, so to speak, is so wowed by it that He decides to include it in Sefer Devarim. Okay, we begin with Sefer Devarim. Eila Devarim Asher Diber Moshe Kol Adas El Kol Yisrael Be'Evar Yadin. These are the words that Moshe spoke, and I'd say Psukim 1 through 7 are really introductory. Okay, if you go to verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Adonai Eloheinu diber eleinu bechorev leimor rav lachem sheves baharazeh. B'nei Yisrael were lingering at Har Sinai. They did not want to leave Har Sinai. Hashem says, it's time to get out of here. Pinu usu lachem uvo haramori. Right, go into the valleys, into the plains, etc. Okay, so far so good. Right? I mean, again, we could spend an entire class on that. But we're going to assume for now, so far so good. Then you get to verse 8. Re'ina sati lifneichem es aretz. Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land. Bo reshu es aretz asher nishbat Adonai levaseichem la'avram li'itzchak li'yakov ula'seis lahem ula'zaram acharem. This is the land. We're finally at that moment that we've been waiting for all of history. The land that was promised to Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. We're finally here. We're on the cusp of going to the land. Now, Va'omar aleichem ba'isahi le'mor, and I told you ba'isahi. We don't know what that ba'isahi is, but at that time, we'll have to figure out what that time is. Okay, lo chal levadi se'isaschem. Moshe says, I cannot do this on my own. Adonai Eloichem, hirbe eschem, v'inchem ayom, kechovei ha'shamayim l'arov. Hashem made you so many that they're just the multitudes of Jews. There's too much for one person to handle. Adonai Elohei avoseichem, yosef alechem kachem, elef pa'amim, God has added you 10,000 times fold. V'yivarech eschem chashir diber lechem. And he's blessed you. Eicha esa levadi tarchechem umasechem verivchem. How alone can I bear all of these difficulties? Havu lachem anashim chachamim unevonim v'yiduim l'shifteichem v'asimeim b'roshechem. Bring me other people. I need assistance in being able to adjudicate all of your cases. V'ta'anu osi, and you answered me. V'tomru tuva davar asher dibarta lasos, this is a good thing. V'akach, and I took as roshei shifteichem anashim chachamim v'yiduim. I took all these very wise people. I placed them in charge. Okay, Pasuk Tezayin 16. And I said to these judges, Shamoa bein achechem ushvatetem tzedek bein ish uvein achiv uvein geiro. Your job is to judge cases. Lo sakiru panim b'mishpat kakaton kagadol tishmaun. Judge properly. Don't switch your judgment based on someone is a big guy, rich guy, poor guy. Doesn't matter. You have to judge properly, no matter what. Lo saguru mneish ki amishpat lelohimu, because you have to judge righteously. Ve'adavar asher yiksheb mikem takriven elai ushmati. And whatever is too difficult for you, bring it to me, and I'll help you out. Va'atzaveh eschem ba'isa hi eskol adavrim asher tasun. And I commanded you at that time all the things that you should do. Close parentheses. Vanisa mechorev, and then we left Chorev and we went to the Midbar. And what happens? We get to Kadesh Barnea, and the Jewish people say, "We want the Meraglim." And basically, from this point until the end of the Perek is all about Moshe lamenting the Meraglim and the role that the Meraglim played in Moshe not being able to go into the Eretz Yisrael. So if you go to verse 37, okay, on 946, Moshe Rabbeinu, towards the end of his soliloquy, so to speak, says, "Gam bi his anaf Adonai biglalchem lemor," that because of you, Hashem also became angry with me. And what did Hashem tell me? Gamata lo savosham. You also are not going to go into the land of Israel. Not only am I going to punish Bnei Yisrael, and this entire generation is going to die out in the Midbar, but you, Moshe, as a result of the Meraglim, you too are not going to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's the first parak of Sefer Devarim. What strikes me as odd is the sequence of the psukim. And that's really what I want to focus on today. Moshe Rabbeinu starts off with Eila HaDvarim. He's giving this final speech, so to speak. This is his parting words to Bnei Yisrael. They're on the precipice of entering into Eretz Yisrael. That's the start. If I were writing Sefer Devarim, I would basically skip from Pasuk 8 to Pasuk 19. I would skip from, we're about to go into the land of Israel, and let me tell you about why it took so long. Why did it take so long for us to go into Eretz Yisrael? Because there was something called the Meraglim. Because you guys came to me, you wanted this thing, didn't work out well for any of us, and as a result, we were stuck in the desert for 40 years. Moshe does something different, though. He interjects about 10 psukim having to do with judges. Right? I'm about to go into the land of Israel, and then, oh, by the way, parenthetically, Hashem blessed us a lot. And because Hashem blessed us a lot, there were too many of us. And because there were too many of us, I couldn't judge all the cases by myself. And so I got really smart people in a room together, and I gave them instructions, and I said, if you ever have trouble with a case, you come to me and I'll help you out. Oh, and then you asked for Meraglim as well. What does one thing have to do with the other? It is such a glaring and obvious, almost inconsistency within the psukim of the flow of the psukim. The placement of the judges here makes no sense, and it's what I want to focus on this morning. And that is really our million-dollar question, is what's the connection between you're about to go into Israel, I'm giving you judges, and Chet HaMeraglim. So before we even get to the Meraglim, we should recognize that the connection between Eretz Yisrael and judges is very strong. I'm going to read for you a few psukim, and there are others. Number one, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, Leman Tichyeh, V'yarashta Es Aretz. We'll read later on in Sefer Dvarim. Hashem says, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof, you should ambitiously pursue justice and righteousness, V'yarashta Es Aretz, and you will inherit the land. Rashi says there, Kedai hu mino yadayanim haksherim lachayos es Yisrael ulahoshivan alad masam. Rashi quotes Chazal that there's a connection between the two of them. That when you have proper judges, then you will merit to land live in the land of Israel. Okay, so again, this connection between Israel and the prophets. Number two, Pasuk in Zechariah, Emes umishpat shalom shiftu bisharechem. When Zechariah is talking about how you should judge properly and with honesty, so over there it points out that it's bisha'areichem, in your gates. And outside of my gates, I don't need to judge properly. So the whole point is that if you judge properly, then tizku leishe bisha'areichem, Chazal say. Then you will merit to live in the land of Israel. That there's this connection, on the one hand, between judges, and on the other hand, between settling in the land of Israel. Next pasuk from Yeshayahu, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, ushaveha bitztaka. That where will Tzion be tipadeh? How will Yerushalayim be redeemed? B'mishpat, that it'll be through judges, that it'll be through righteousness. I didn't have this written down in my notes, but I believe that if we turn to the Haftorah that we're going to read this week, so we're going to read this week the Haftorah for Parshas Dvarim. And at the end, what's it going to say? V'ashiva shoftayich kivar rishona, v'yoatzayich kvat chila, achareichein yikarei lach ir hatzedek kirya ne'amana, which is the pasuk right before the pasuk I just quoted of Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh. But what this is even more overt. V'ashiva shoftayich kivar rishona. Hashem says, I will return your judges like they were previously. And then, achareichein, afterwards, yikarei lach ir hatzedek kirya ne'amana. Then you'll merit Yerushalayim. So there is a complete connection in Yeshayahu that we're going to read the Shabbos between setting up a system of judges and meriting the Geula, meriting the redemption. This, parenthetically, is one of the reasons why in the 16th century, when Rav Yaakov Beirav, when the Ma'ari Beirav tried to institute or reinstitute the Sanhedrin, that was why they were attempting to reinstitute the Sanhedrin. In other words, if you are living in a messianic mindset and you want Mashiach to come, and so you're living in Tzfat in the 16th century, anticipating the coming of Mashiach, so what is the prerequisite to all of that, say the rabbis in Tzfat in the 16th century? A prerequisite of that is that you need to have a Sanhedrin. You need to have a system of judges. And so the whole institution of the Sanhedrin, or the attempt to reinstitute the Sanhedrin, was simply an attempt to lay the groundwork for the coming of Mashiach. Similar to attempts that were made in our generation as well, of people who have tried to reinstitute the Sanhedrin, because again, it's all part of this messianic yearning. That in order for Mashiach to come, the prerequisite for that is that we're going to first have a system of judges. What's the connection between those? Why is it so important that we have judges to coming into Eretz Yisrael? Well, it's clear from Chazal that that is the connection, right? That there is, we have to dig a little deeper as to why, but it's clear that there's a connection between Eretz Yisrael and judges. And so I understand my first two parts, right? Moshe Rabbeinu starts off with saying, you're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Then Moshe Rabbeinu says, wait a second, before I continue with the narrative, I'm going to instruct you about judges. Now I understand that connection. The prerequisite for going into Eretz Yisrael is going to be having a system of judges.
Honest judges.
Honest judges, correct. Okay? The Shem Yishmuel words this a little bit differently. Shem Yishmuel, Sakcha Rebbe, writes the following. He says, Asisa Mishpat Vitzedek, Bal Tanicheni Looshkai, which is a pasuk in Tehillim. He says here, Ki b'mishpat tzedek me'orim lamala midat ha-mishpat. That our ability to have an appropriate system of justice in this world inspires an appropriate system of justice in Hashem's quote-unquote world. What does that mean? He says here, Eretz Yisrael shemuchzeket lahem levnei Yisrael me'avoseim. Eretz Yisrael is rightfully ours. It was promised to us from our forefathers. And yet, what do we know happened? V'haknanim sheyoshvim bam u'machzikim bam shelo kedin. Other people throughout history have come and they've attempted to steal Eretz Yisrael from us. That's the first Rashi in the Torah, that's going to happen. Okay, so Eretz Yisrael was in the hands of those who it didn't really belong to. Therefore, says the Shem Yishmuel, Al Kain, Kimo shebe'asiyat mishpat v'tzedek misalkin es oshek adam. When we perform justice in this world, we are taking back what rightfully belonged to an owner and giving it back to him. Right, so Reuven steals money from Shimon. If I have a system of justice, Shimon gives back what was rightfully belonging to Reuven. Says the Shem Yishmuel, Kein misalkin nami es oshek aret. So too Hashem will give back the land to who it rightfully belongs. V'im kein, mashenis yaru la'alos, af she'amdu as atzma bilti ru'im mikol makom. Acharei asiyat mishpat v'tzedek, after we perform justice in this world, says the Shem Yishmuel, haya lahem liv toach, shelo yaniach la'ashkam v'la'ashok et aretz. Hashem essentially guarantees us that he will perform justice in Eretz Yisrael. Once again, reinforcing this connection between Eretz Yisrael on the one hand and a proper system of justice on the other. Why are they so important to one another? Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that one of the reasons why we lost Eretz Yisrael, all you have to do is read some of the nevuahs that we're going to read in Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu, the Haftorah that we read on regular fast days, is one of the things that went wrong was that they were inappropriately oppressing widows and orphans. They were taking those who were on the quote-unquote the oppressed part of society, those who were easy to prey upon, and there was no system in place to protect them. And so the Torah here is clear that part of having Eretz Yisrael is learning how to treat the oppressed and the indigent and the orphans and the widows appropriately. And until you can learn to do that, until you can learn to take care of your own, you cannot merit my land. That's essentially what Hashem tells us. So far, so good, I think, at least a little bit. Okay, we understand the connection, or we understand at least that there is a deep-seated connection between Eretz Yisrael and our ability to inherit the land of Israel and our ability to have an appropriate system of courts and judges. Of fair and honest judges. That only gets us, I'd say, to the 20-yard line. Because the rest of the picture is equally, if not more, unclear. And that is, what role does Chet HaMeraglim play in all this? Right? If we're assuming that the Torah isn't just a series of disjointed psukim, but that there's a theme that, or a narrative that Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem are trying to create here. So we understand A and B, but we don't understand C. Right? The Torah itself asks, Ma inyan Shemitah Yitzal Har Sinai? What does Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? Chazal themselves understand that the Torah doesn't just put A next to B or B next to C, unless there's a reason for it. So we understand why A is now next to B. That we proved from numerous psukim, that's our Haftorah this coming Shabbos, that's the Shem Yishmuel, very beautiful. What does all this have to do with Chet HaMeraglim? Well, in order to understand that, you have to think about what the chait of the Meraglim was. What was the sin of the Meraglim? Was it simply that the Jewish people despised the land of Israel? Well, not so simple, as we know. And we generally don't run to paint Klal Yisrael in such a pejorative sense. So what was the sin of the Meraglim? So they spoke negatively about the land of Israel. Well, that would be really helpful if the Torah did what here? If the Torah went straight from Moshe's introduction straight into Chet HaMeraglim, I would agree with you. And I would say that it's all about Eretz Yisrael. We're about to go, it would basically be Moshe saying to Bnei Yisrael, you're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Before we get there, don't make the same mistake you made last time. We've been here before. Right? It's the equivalent of telling a child. Okay? A child throws a temper tantrum and loses, not that this would ever happen in my house, but loses a donut for dessert. Okay? So the next day, when the child's in the exact same situation, what would you do? You'd pull your child aside and you'd say, don't do it again. Right? Your mom's going to punish you the same way, or your dad's going to punish you the same way he or she punished you yesterday. Don't be stupid and make the same mistake. That's exactly what you'd say. Get the donut this time. So if the Torah went straight from our introduction directly into talking about Meraglim, I would say 100%. It's all about Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, they're about to come in. Moshe is saying, before you make the same mistake you made last time, remember their mistakes, learn from their mistakes, and let's go in singing Hava Negila. Okay? That's not what happens, though. The Torah interjects this whole narrative. It's 10 psukim. It's a large chunk of real estate. And the Torah interjects it all about judges. What do judges have to do here? Yeah. Good. What does that have to do with judges? In other words, I'm agreeing with everything everyone's saying. That if you leave out this, what I'll call this parenthetical tempsukim, so all of this makes sense. Because yes, the sin of the, we know that the sin of Meraglim is connected to Eretz Yisrael. I don't need Sefer Devarim to tell me that. I know that already from Sefer Bamidbar, when Hashem punishes us because of Chet HaMeraglim, and the punishment is you can't go into Eretz Yisrael. It's essentially Hashem saying, because you abused it, you don't get it. So you're taking the Shemi Shul's premise that what we do down here reflects what goes on up there, and you're saying because we didn't judge Hashem's system of righteousness properly, Hashem is saying you need to first learn a system of righteousness before you can then apply it to me. Okay, perhaps, yeah. Correct. So that's where I want to take us a little bit. Who are the Meraglim? So the Zohar tells us, and I'm not going to read us the Zohar, I'm going to read a Hebrew translation of the Zohar. I'll spare us all my Aramaic a little bit. But this is essentially a rough translation. Kishayalu Yisrael Aretz, that when Bnei Yisrael came up to the land, which in Aramaic is Ya'alun Yisrael La'ara, so far so good, okay? Ya'aviru Osanu Milios Roshim. Nit'aber Anun Milihave Rishin. We are no longer going to be leaders. We're no longer going to be in charge. Why? Deha anan zachinu bamidbar lemehavin rashin. We merited in the desert to be in charge. Aval ba'ara lo niski. But in the land of Israel, we are not going to be zocha. We're not going to merit this form of leadership. They're worried about their positions. Right? What was the fear of the Meraglim? Was it just about the big grapes and the tall towers? No. It was about there's a fundamental difference between life in the Midbar and life in Eretz Yisrael. And they knew that the power that they held right now, they were going to lose a little bit, if not all of that power, when Bnei Yisrael went to Eretz Yisrael. Well, that's very interesting. Because if that's the sin of the Meraglim, is really a failure in leadership, so how would you characterize this failure in leadership? If you had to do it in a less than a sentence, a couple words, yeah? Well, it's more than poor judgment, right? Poor judgment would say, I wouldn't exactly characterize it as poor judgment. Selfishness, maybe arrogance, right? Saying that I need to be in charge and it's about me. And if it's about me, who's it not about? Hashem or you. Well, that's a significant challenge, right? Because now it's about leaders who love their leadership so much that they're willing to prevent Bnei Yisrael from going into the promised land just so that they can maintain their leadership. Okay? It's about power. It's about ego. Okay? That's a very dangerous characteristic for leaders to have. Well, once that we see that this failure of the Meraglim is a failure of leadership, it opens up a whole door for us. Because what's the antidote to leaders who are powerful or strive for power and covet power and covet positions of power? So what word in Hebrew is the opposite of gava, of arrogance? Anivut is the sense of humility, right? What do we want from leaders? You want a leader that's capable. You want a leader that's smart. You want a leader that can lead you. But you also want a leader that's humble. Because a humble leader knows that it's not about themselves, but it's about the people that they serve. It's not about themselves, but it's about Hashem. Right? And without going into too much commentary, we know all too many stories nowadays of leaders within our community who have allowed power to go to their head. And as a result of that, bad things happen. Okay? Because a leader felt that they were too strong to fail. Or a leader felt that it was all about them and their ego. And that's oftentimes when power struggles exist within shuls or within organizations, right? We know the pitfalls of ego when it comes to leaders. How does this help us, though? What's the connection, therefore? So let me share with you a few comments by Chazal that I think begin to shed some light on our topic, which got me a little bit excited. First of all, the Chida. The Chida writes the following. Did you ever wonder why the land of Canaan is called Canaan? Well, I never did. What? Yeah, the Canaanim. Why was Eretz Yisrael, of all places, called Canaan? Could have called it Timbuktu, right? And we could have said the Timbuktus live there. Why Canaanim? So the Chida writes, Hainu osa Eretz shenitna nichnaim lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does nichnaim mean? Submit, right? The midah of nichna is a midah of humility. It's a characteristic of humility. When I submit myself to Hashem, I'm submitting myself to a higher authority. It's me representing that I'm not perfect and that there's a higher authority that I answer to. Says the Chida, the word Kenaan, the word for Eretz Yisrael, is shenatna l'nichnaim lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a land that's given to those who are humble, those who submit themselves before Hashem. The Shla, building himself on this comment of the Chida, writes, Sarich Hadam Hadar be'Eretz Yisrael, that the person who lives in Eretz Yisrael, Tamid Lizchor b'shem Kenan, he always has to remember that he's living in a land that bears the name Kenan. Hamore, that teaches us, Al avdut vehachna'a, about our avdut, that we are servants to Hashem, and that we have to submit ourselves to Hashem. In other words, the person who successfully lives in Eretz Yisrael is a person who recognizes that it's not about them, but it's about Hashem. Okay? Contrast, and we do this all the time. What is the foil to Eretz Yisrael in the Torah? The contrast. The yin to the yang. So Mitzrayim. Okay? How is Mitzrayim characterized? Mitzrayim is characterized as a land that's void of God. Right? Who plays the role of God in Mitzrayim? Paro. Right? Paro, that's why he doesn't go to the bathroom. But where does, even more than Paro, who? The Nile. Right? The Nile. The Nile River is the source of power. And therefore, Eretz Mitzrayim, the land of Mitzrayim, is characterized as a place that man is in control, man is in power, and God is no longer necessary. That's why, what phrase comes up over and over and over again throughout Sefer Shmos when talking about the plagues? What phrase? V'yadata ki ani Hashem. You will now know that I am Hashem. And we always wondered throughout our studies of Sefer Shmot, who is supposed to know that I am Hashem? Is it the Mitzrim or is it Bnei Israel? The answer is both. In other words, when you're steeped in the culture of Mitzrayim that is so antithetical to a culture of Hashem, so part of the educational obligation that Bnei Israel had was to understand that it's about Hashem, that it's not about Mitzrayim, that it's not about Paro. That's what Mitzrayim needed to learn. That's what we needed to learn. What's the other foil to Eretz Yisrael? We've talked about this in the past. Okay, there are two places in Tanakh that man is not allowed to go back to. What are they? Mitzrayim and Gan Eden. Right, we've talked about this in the past. Isn't it interesting that we put Gan Eden up on a pedestal in our mind, and yet no one in Tanakh ever tries to get back to Gan Eden? Avram doesn't try to get back to Gan Eden. Moshe doesn't try to get back to Gan Eden. No one ever tries to get back to Gan Eden. Where do they go? They all go to Eretz Yisrael, right? Eretz Yisrael is the opposite of Gan Eden. Hold on, just give me a second, right? So Eretz Yisrael is the opposite of Gan Eden. Well, it's so interesting. Now, what is Gan Eden? What was the problem in Gan Eden? It's the exact same problem that we had in Mitzrayim. Okay, I'll read for you a pasuk. When the Nachash is enticing Chava, what phrase does he use? Ki odea Elokim, because God knows, ki biyom achalchem mimenu v'nifkechu einechem, that the day that you eat from this tree that God said not to, your eyes are suddenly going to be opened. V'hayisem ke'elohim yodea tovara. You will be like a god. You will be godlike. In other words, the power that Hashem has, mankind will now share that same power. Okay, and the pasuk continues. I can't remember the exact pasuk here, but there's another pasuk that reinforces this notion that the whole sin of Gan Eden, right. Vayomer Hashem Elokim, hein adam haya ke'achad mimenu ladat tovara, that mankind has become one of us. Notice, mankind has made himself as powerful in his eyes as I am. So Gan Eden and Mitzrayim are all about human power and our ability to control. Okay, we are like God. The Nile, when we rely on nature, we no longer need Hashem. That's why we're kicked out of both places. The word Vayigaresh, Vayishlechehu, that we were expelled from Mitzrayim, we were expelled from Gan Eden. No one's allowed to go back to either one of them. Where do we go? We go to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is a land, Einei Hashem Elokech, right, Tamid Einei Hashem Elokech Abba, that Hashem's eyes are always on Eretz Yisrael. What does Gan Eden and Mitzrayim also have in common? They're both characterized by rivers, right? The Nile, power. Gan Eden has four rivers extending from it. Eretz Yisrael is the only land that, at least in Tanakh, has no rivers in it. Okay? Where does Eretz Yisrael rely upon for irrigation, for agriculture? Rain. Right? Rain. Think about all the Mishnayos that we learn about in Maseches Tainus. That rain literally held the keys of life and death. That's why we have Morid HaGeshem, Morid HaTal. We make a big deal about rain in Judaism. It's not just because we live in Florida and there are hurricanes. It's because if you lived in Eretz Israel, you lived in the Middle East, in an agricultural society, and you don't have bodies of water, you don't have a Nile River, what are you relying on? Rain. Well, who controls rain? The Nile I can see in front of me. That's it. I don't need God for the Nile. But what do I need God for? Rain. And so when there wasn't rain, they had a whole system of fasts. All of the Mishnayos and Maseches Tainis are all about the fast days that were instituted when there was no rain. Because when there's no rain, you look up to the heavens and you pray to Hashem. So this is interesting. Okay? Because according to the Shla, right, the whole notion of Eretz Yisrael is this notion of humility. To distinguish itself from Gan Eden, where mankind became so arrogant that they thought they were as powerful as Hashem, and to distinguish us from Mitzrayim, where mankind was so arrogant there was no need for God because he had the Nile. Eretz Yisrael is a land that the whole prerequisite of living on the land is humility, of what the Shla calls Avdut V'Hachna, recognizing that we don't serve ourselves, we serve Hashem, and that we have Hachna. We submit ourselves to Hashem. Hachna'ah, excuse me. We submit ourselves to Hashem. Okay? The Pasuk in Devarim tells us, Ki Adonai Elohecha Mevi'acha El Eretz HaTova, that Hashem is going to bring us to the land of Israel. He shamir lecha pentishkach es Hashem Elokecha. Be careful lest you forget Hashem. When do we forget Hashem? When it's too good, and when it's too good, we don't need Hashem anymore, right? You only daven, right? Halavai, I'll put it this way, that we should daven to Hashem when life is good, the same way someone davens to Hashem when a spouse is really sick, right? No, when things are desperate, we remember Hashem very quickly. When things are good, we forget Hashem very quickly. Okay, what does the pasuk then say? V'ram levavecha v'shachach des Hashem. V'ram levavecha, which means your heart is high, right? A person haughty. A person is arrogant. Then v'shachach des Hashem. Then you're going to forget Hashem. Says, I don't know who says this. I have this quoted here from a sefer by Rav Rivlin in Devarim. Ram in gematria is what? Resh Mem. 240. Same gematria as Amalek. Trust me, it works out. Okay? Amalek. Amalek is this notion of power and arrogance, of man in control, not God, which is why Amalek is so destructive to our entire philosophy. Where does Amalek attack Bnei Yisrael every time?
In the weakest spot.
In the weakest spot, but when we're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's when Amalek and Eretz Yisrael always have this connection. Okay? Because exactly this purpose. They are the antithesis to Eretz Yisrael. Amalek is all about power and arrogance and mankind. And Eretz Yisrael is about hachna'ah. It's about submitting ourselves. It's about the sense of humility. Yes, you're very eager to ask a question. No, no. I don't know. I'm also not holding a Tiferet. That sounds, another couple of years I'll get to those words. I'm not there yet. I'm not sure. Okay. So now we're starting to piece the puzzle together. Because if we understand that Eretz Yisrael, that the sin of the Meraglim was about leaders who, it was more about them than it was about the cause. They were willing to prevent Bnei Yisrael from going into Eretz Yisrael in order to maintain their power. And Eretz Yisrael, we know, is a land that requires humility. It's a land that requires the humble servant as opposed to the arrogant servant. Right? Where leaders need to know that it's not about them, but that it's about Hashem. And now we can start piecing together a little bit about why it is, or the development of the psukim from one to the other. If anyone ever learned Gemara, or even look at the Psukim, what is one of the words that the Torah uses to refer to judges? So we know the obvious one is a shofet, right? Eila ha-mishpatim, shoftim v'shotrim. We know these words. Dayan, okay? What is another word that trips up a Baal Kore over and over? If you don't know any better. The word is Elohim. Okay, the word is Elohim. Word for judges. So for example, if you look, I'll just show you so you don't think I'm lying. But if you look at Shmos Chaf Aleph Vav, which I'll tell you the page here in a second. So if you look in... If you look on page 418, Vihigishu Adonav El HaElohim. Okay, this is at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. Vihigishu Adonav El HaElohim. His master brings him El HaElohim. Elohim here is not God. Rashi says El HaElohim LeBeisdin. Elohim is another word for judges. Later on in Parsha Shmos, again, a very famous pasuk for those who ever learned Gemara. This is that when two people are fighting with one another, what does the pasuk say? Where am I? Asher yarshiun Elohim yishalem shnayim l'reyehu. As the Elohim judges. It's not talking about God there. It's talking about court system. Ad ha-Elohim yavo devar shneim. Then when two people have a case against each other, ad ha-Elohim yavo shneim. They bring it to Elohim. They bring it to judges. Asks the Ramban, what an interesting word to use for judges. And so says the Ramban in his commentary on Shoftim, that why is this the case? So he says, quotes the Gemara in, the Eliyah Rabbah, the Medrash, who says, that when a judge sits and judges properly, kavayachol, which means like it's as if, maniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmei HaShemayim, Hashem leaves whatever he's doing up there, umishra shchinaso betzido. Hashem comes and he dwells, he sits next to the judge. Okay? So in an ideal sense, when a judge is judging properly, what does it mean for a judge to judge properly? It means it's not about him. It's about the facts in front of him. It's about
justice.
It's about justice. So when a judge judges properly, says the Ramban, what does Hashem do? Hashem comes and sits next to him. Because when it's not about you, who do you make space for? You make space for Hashem. When it's all about you and my ego is so inflated, there's no room for God. But when it's not about me, when it's about simply I am an emissary of God, when I'm a messenger of the truth, so then God is able to come and sit next to me. So the same word for God is the word used for a judge. The Ramban says, what an amazing play on words. Because a judge can be one of two people. A judge can either make himself like a God, he can become so haughty and arrogant and inflated and bloated that he becomes the God, he is the Elohim, as in the case of the Meraglim, where the Meraglim decide that they know what's best, it was all about them, or a judge can be what? A judge can be a partner with God. A partner with God. Where a judge, it's about the case, and therefore God comes and sits next to him. A judge can be either one of those people. It all depends on how they approach it. Okay? And one final thought, and this will tie it all in together. What does Moshe Rabbeinu tell Bnei Israel? He tells them all about these judges, okay? And how does he introduce them? He says, I told you to have judges, Anashim Chachamim Unevonim Viduim Leshiftechem. People who are Chachamim, Chacham is wise, okay? Nivonim is like dat, ubina, right? Understanding. Okay, so far so good. V'yidu'im l'shifteichem. And they are known to their shevet. I know a guy. What does that have to do with here?
Maybe they'll know to be honest.
So, what the Ramban says it means is that I can judge a person's intellect. I can sit down with anyone, I could ask them a few questions, and you'll know very quickly whether or not that person is smart, whether they're knowledgeable, whether they have a background. That is objective. You can objectively study that. What's harder to understand is the stuff that lies beneath the surface. Is this person a good person? Is this person an honest person? Is this person arrogant or humble? That's a lot harder to judge when meeting a person in an interview. We have this with conversion candidates all the time. I tell the conversion candidate the easiest part is learning the information. That's on your schedule. You can learn fast, you can learn slow. That's, so to speak, it's the easy part to judge. What makes the Beis Din's job so hard is the intangibles. Okay, what is this person doing behind the scenes? What are they doing on a Shabbos afternoon? When, you know, in a long summer Shabbos afternoon. Stuff that I can't see, I can't objectively tell. It's much more subjective. It's like a taste or a feel. So here, Moshe says, I pick judges, not just who are smart and wise, but who are yiduim l'shivteichem. Who's going to know them? Their neighbors, person across the street from them, the person they had Shabbos meal with last week. That's the person who's going to know on a much more intimate level not just how smart this person is, but whether they're a good person. Right? Moshe specifically says, I don't just want the smartest. I want good people. I want people who have a neshama, who are caring, who are humble, who are going to do the honest and true thing. So it's important that Moshe doesn't just highlight the intellectual, academic side, but he specifically says what's important to us is that they're good people. And you're going to know that a lot better than I am, because you see them on a day-to-day basis. I don't. Okay, that's important piece number one. Important piece number two is, what does Moshe point out? He says, when you're going to judge. So first of all, you're not going to be tainted by whether the person is rich or poor, you know, important or not important. You're going to judge what's correct no matter what. Okay, again, not about you, but about the truth. What's just. Not about earning yourself currying favors. Number two, he says, in the last pasuk, "V'hadavar asher yikshem mikem," things that are too difficult for you, "Takrivun elai," bring it to me, "Ushmativ," and I will hear it. Now, what word would you have used there? I will have judged it. Right? That's probably the word that I would have used. Right? Ushmativ is a very strange word. Says Rav Hirsch, and I'll read it to you in the Hebrew, because I have the English translation that I have, it might as well be gibberish. But says Rav Hirsh, Ba'avanosenu, Ba'anvenuso, in his humility, Ein Moshe Omer Va'ashmi Achem. Moshe doesn't say that I'm basically going to judge your case. Right, what does he say? Ella, hu omer ushmativ. Moshe says, I will listen to your case. I gamirna, gamirna. If I can solve it, I'll solve it. I lo, if I can't, azlina ugamina. I'll go to someone else, and I'll ask him for help. That's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says. Imuchal ifsokes adin. If I can properly judge this case, Al pi halachot shenemar likvar, through what I know, efsok batzmi, then I'll decide the case. V'im lav, evakesh mehashem sheilamdeni. Then I will ask from Hashem, and He will teach me. Ushmativ, therefore, is really the key word to all of this. Because what's Moshe doing? He's showing Bnei Yisrael what is the goal of a judge. The goal of a judge is to listen. It's not about superimposing your predetermined desires or will. It's not about doing what's best for you, but it's about listening. Someone who listens, right? Does an arrogant person listen? They've already made up their mind. They do what's best for them. A humble person listens. A good listener is someone who's more interested in the truth, in helping others, than they are about their own self-aggrandizement. Notice in these two psukim how many times the word Shema is used. Shamoa ben achechem, listen. Tishma'un, kakaton gagadol, tishma'un. And then, ushmativ. And then, right, this word Shema comes up over and over and over again, three times in two psukim. Because the whole point what Moshe is trying to tell them is that the antidote to the meraglim is having leaders who are humble. And so now let's piece our whole puzzle together. We started off with three parts to our puzzle. There's the, you're about to go into Israel. There's the judges. And there's the meraglim. We described how if we cut out the meraglim and we just went from you're about to go into Israel into the meraglim, we'd understand that. I'm sorry, if we cut out the judges, so we would understand. You're about to go into Israel. Don't make the same mistake as the meraglim. What is this judges doing here? So perhaps what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing is he's telling Bnei Yisrael exactly about what got them into this mess. What was the sin of the meraglim, and how are you going to fix the sin of the meraglim? You're going to do that by having the right leaders put in place. The first thing you're going to do when you get into Eretz Yisrael, says Moshe, is you're going to set up a system of courts. You're going to set up a system of judges. You're going to have leaders who are going to guide you. Don't forget, Moshe Rabbeinu here is talking about to a new generation. And so this isn't just recollection. What we're talking about now is not historical recollection. We're talking about moral instruction. The moral instruction that Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them is, will you, as a generation, also fail like the previous generation? Will you make the exact same mistakes that the previous generation made? Or will you preempt that by setting up a system that prevents the previous sins of the generation? And so what Moshe Rabbeinu starts off with is, you're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, let's make sure we get it right this time. We want judges that aren't just interested in themselves, but we want judges who are interested in justice, in truth, in helping other people, about putting other people's needs before theirs. We want humble judges, not arrogant judges. And it's if you do that, says Moshe, if you put in place a correct system of just judges, then you'll merit the land of Israel. We got kicked out of Eretz Israel because our judges abused justice. Pay attention this Shabbos. Pay attention on Tisha B'Av to the Haftorahs, to the Torah readings. It's all about abuse of justice. It's all about leaders and people in positions of power that used their positions and abused it. They used it to capitalize on oppressed. They used it to capitalize on widows and orphans and indigent and the poor. Says Hashem, the way to get away from that is to have leaders, to have people in positions of leadership who are going to put others' needs before them, where it's not about their power, but it's about the people's power. And that's why Moshe interjects this parenthetical temp sukim, all about judges, right smack in the middle of it. Because this isn't about historical recollection, it's about moral instruction. Moshe is telling Bnei Israel, you need good leaders. You need judges in court systems that are going to help the oppressed and not abuse the oppressed. And if you do that, you get the land of Israel. What does that have to do with the land of Israel? Because humility. Only someone who's humble can merit a land that requires humility. And when people become too inflated, when they become too powerful, when they become too arrogant, well, you can no longer live in Eretz Yisrael. That belongs in Mitzrayim. That belongs in Gan Eden. But you, Bnei Israel, the people that live in Israel are a people that are defined by their humility, by their hachna'ah, by their submitting themselves not to their own power, but to a greater system of justice. I'll point out one final thought. Hold on. Hashem puts his money where his mouth is. Okay? Every time we talk about Hashem's power, we also talk about Hashem's humility. I could give you countless examples, but I'll just read from you from the Gemara in Maseches Megillah. Now, the reason why I found it in the Siddur is because many shuls have a custom at the end of Shabbos to say Ve'yitein Lecha. Our shul does not, because we have ants in our pants. But many shuls say it, if not many individuals say it. Ve'yitein Lecha is essentially a series of psukim having to do with bracha, blessing. And we read it on Motzei Shabbos that we should start our week with bracha. At the end of it, the Siddur quotes the Gemara in Megillah. Let me read it to you. Amar Rav Yochanan, Beko makom she'ata motzei gdulaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shama ta motzei an visanuso. Wherever we talk about Hashem's greatness, we also talk about Hashem's humility. Davar zeh kasu b'Torah, v'shanoi b'nevim u'meshulash b'ksuvim. I'm going to bring you proofs from Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. Katub ba'Torah, it says in the Torah, Ki Adonai Eloheichem, Hu Elohei Elohim, V'Adonai Adonim, God is the God of all the spheres, He's big God. Ha'el, Ha'gadol, Ha'gibor, V'Anara, He's all these great things. Asher lo yisa panim v'lo yikach shochad, He can't be bribed. And what does it say immediately afterwards? Next pasuk, Ose mishpat yatzom ve'almana ve'hoiv ger la'seis lo lechem v'simla. Big God, God who created the heavens and earth, is also Ose mishpat yatzom ve'almana. He's doing justice for the widows and the orphans. He loves the converts and He gives clothing to them. Now, there's everyone who is oppressed by society. That's who Hashem takes care of. There's no contradiction between what I call big God and little God. The God who created heavens and earth, and the God who cares about the lowest elements of society. Shanu ibn Nevi'im, says the Gemara. I'm going to bring you proof from the Nevi'im. It says, Ko amar ram v'nisa shochein ad v'kadosh shmo marom v'kadosh ashkon. God is, I don't even need to translate it, above. He's big. He's great. And what does it say right afterwards? V'estaka u'shval ruach l'achayot Ruach Shvalim u'achayos lev nidkaim, which means that Hashem cares about the lowly of spirit, those who need a certain revival. Again, big God and little God. And lastly, in Ksuvim, it's written, this is in Tehillim, Shiru l'Elohim zamru shmo solu l'rochei baravot. Right? Again, a God who is in the highest of heavens. And then right afterwards, what does it say? Avi Yisomim, He is the father of orphans. Dayan Amanot, He is the judge of widows. Elohim Bim'on Kadsho. Right? There is no contradiction between Hashem as the big Hashem and Hashem who takes care of the indigent and the lower margins of society. And that's what Hashem says has to be your judges. That has to be your leaders who lead you into Eretz Yisrael. It has to be modeled after that. That it can be people that are in positions of power, but ultimately, they have to use that power wisely. That the power isn't about themselves, but the power is about helping others and helping create justice. A system where society doesn't allow those marginalized to become abused or taken advantage of. So I think with this understanding, we're able to piece together the three elements about to go into Eretz Yisrael, what the judges are doing here, and the Meraglim, that the sin of the Meraglim were judges that became too powerful about themselves. Moshe Rabbeinu warns them that if you want to go into Eretz Yisrael, it's about having leaders, but it's about leaders who are going to be humble. And in that, we're able to piece together these three, and I think also a beautiful message for the Tisha B'Av that we're approaching, what got us into this mess, what's going to get us out of this mess. We talk about Avas Chinam and Sinas Chinam, but if you look at the Nevi'im, it's very clear that it was about those marginalized by society that were abused by society itself. That the exact systems that were put in place to protect them were instead used to abuse them. And so by us modeling ourselves after Hashem, that we can be great and we can have positions of leadership, but using that to help those in need, that is the form of leadership that Hashem ultimately demands of us.